Colorado Independent School District.
We have two reports, Virginia Tech, Pat Barber, who is in our position. The district is reserved 5 minutes for public. Mr. Harrington will open with the first 10 minutes. Mr. Barber will follow with 5. Mr. Harrington will present rebuttal for 5 minutes.
Good morning. I'm happy to be joined by Pat Barber, who is the father of Austin Barber, the class representative in this case, and who tried the case out in Mitchell County. This case concerns the extent to which a school can require an adult high school student to cut his hair to conform to a hair code in the context of the district not being able to show any disruption whatsoever. This case, unlike others that probably come here, really is a classic case of civil liberty and individual freedom. And it also represents a confluence of various fundamental rights. It involves and invokes the right of privacy to define your own personhood, your own autonomy. It involves the right of symbolic speech. It involves the right that people have now under the Texas Equal Rights Amendment to be free from gender-based discrimination. And it also involves the right to an education. All these come together. And unlike the other two appellate cases that have been reported, Mercer and Tungate, this comes to you on a full trial record. This is not coming to you in an interlocutory posture, but there has been a full trial in which evidence was fully developed, in which ironically, or perhaps very well for us, a number of principals from West Texas testified, including the principal in this school who did not favor the hair code. Superintendent testified from West Texas District. A president of the school board from West Texas also testified.
Mr. Harrington, let me see if we could zero in on some competing rights, perhaps, and responsibilities. The legislature has given the local school boards the authority to set rules to govern independent school districts. Some school districts, based on the power given by the legislature, have given the power to have dress codes. Some have chosen not to have dress codes. Dress codes generally reflect community standards. The federal courts have struggled with this issue on the federal constitution, have drawn a line not on age, but on institutions. They say universities, you cannot have these rules about grooming and dress codes. High schools you can, federal courts we're not going to bother. These are in nature of some frivolous lawsuits in light of what's happening in our school district with regards to crime, babies having babies, discipline, drugs, gangs, etc. We're not going to use the resources of our school district to pay attorney's fees or the courts to vindicate those rights. Why should we not draw the line like the federal courts have done at high school? We will not enforce your constitutional rights like we don't enforce some constitutional rights like the freedom of speech, for example, in buffer-free zones, in free speech zones, for example, in protesting abortion clinics. Why can't we do that in Texas? Or why shouldn't we do that in Texas? In other words, does the Equal Rights Amendment strip the local school boards from the authority to have dress codes?
Well, I'd like to distinguish between a dress code and a hair code, and maybe deal with that. A hair code, the courts have recognized, is different than a dress code, because a hair code, unlike a dress code, affects your entire life. This is not, as Judge Roney said in the Fifth Circuit case, the 8-7 en banc decision, that hair is not something you can take off and put on. This is really part of you, and it's different than dealing with a gang color issue, perhaps, or dealing with kids that are wearing expensive sneakers to school, that sort of thing. Now, even though the legislature has fully empowered school boards to enact legislation, there are some things, of course, that everybody is bound by the Constitution. For example, the school board could not pass a regulation allowing discrimination because its Bill of Rights would trump in that case. And that's what we're saying here. This is different than the federal system. Because under the federal system, privacy is not a fundamental right under the federal system. This court has also found heightened free speech protection that does not exist under the First Amendment, under the federal constitution. Similarly, there is no ERA in the federal system. And this court has recognized that the ERA grants, in fact, the right to be free from sex-based discrimination. It can only be justified by a compelling state interest. No other reasonable step can be taken to justify what needs to be justified. So, and the other reason, I think, is a political reason. We have these legal reasons we're dealing with fundamental rights that do not exist under the federal constitution. And the school board cannot trample on those rights or abridge them without a compelling interest. And the courts say that means disruption. In this case, we have a record in which there's been no disruption. The Hair Code was not enforced for a whole year. No disruption whatsoever. In fact, there is no argument in the record that there would be disruption whatsoever. We, on this particular record, is what we're talking about. Now, on the question of the political aspect of it, the federal courts have a different sort of mandate under the Constitution. They really exercise a limited kind of power, and that's basically what the court says in Carr versus Schmidt. We ought not get involved in the local level on these sorts of questions, because we sit in New Orleans, we are a national court, we look at national policy. But the Texas judiciary is different. It's a fully empowered judiciary, and in this case, we have a West Texas judge making the decision, an elected judge responsible to the voters in that community, making the decision.
We also had an elected school board that made the decision to have a dress code.
That's right, but that's checks and balances.
What about the age factor? The courts have decided, the federal courts have decided to draw the line, not in age, but in institutions. Would you address this young man's 18, he's a young adult, and the compulsory school laws in Texas do not require him to go to school?
Well, they don't.
Not over 17?
That's right, they don't require him to go to school, and I think, I find that argument that the school board makes pretty unsatisfactory kind of answer. If you don't want to cut your hair, you can simply drop out of school. It's kind of, in our day and age, to make that sort of Hobson's choice, I just don't think is an appropriate response for a school board to be making.
Doesn't that approach the subject of waiving? Don't we have authority that an adult can waive certain constitutional rights and interests and make a choice?
Well,
I mean, doesn't that broach that subject?
That's true, but the federal courts have also looked at it, Justice Enoch, in the sense that you can't compel someone to surrender a constitutional right for another right, and then basically this is what you're doing in this case. It comes up, for example, in Social Security context, can you compel someone, for example, to say they would allow their house to be searched without a warrant in order to receive Social Security benefits? The courts simply say you can't give people that kind of choice.
To get beyond this waiver issue, then we would have to make a threshold determination that Mr. Barber has a constitutional right to his education and therefore create the competing interests that you're saying he can't be forced to waive one in order to exercise the other.
I don't even think you have to go that far, because the electorate and this court have already spoken that we're dealing with fundamental rights, privacy, we're dealing with symbolic expression, dealing with ERA, the right to be free from gender-based discrimination. Those are already defined as a fundamental right. They, in and of themselves, have value. And you cannot intrude upon those rights absent a showing of a compelling state interest. In this case, the courts always say in the school context, disruption is the compelling state interest. There is no disruption in this case. There's no suggestion of disruption.
That's after there's a determination that that waiver cannot occur in this circumstance.
Our case doesn't turn on the waiver question. It comes up. I mean, that's an argument they use, is you want to have your hair long, simply drop out of school. And I just say that's, I think, an inappropriate response for an educational.
My question was, that broaches the subject of waiver. Cannot an 18-year-old adult waive certain constitutional rights by deciding he wants to go back and get an education? Your argument was, well, that can't occur because you can't force someone to give up one constitutional right to exercise another. And so my question to you was, to get beyond the notion of an adult waiving certain interests in order to obtain a benefit of this education, don't we have to conclude that there's a competing constitutional interest?
No, not at all.
A constitutional right to education versus a constitutional
Not at all, because the context of these have come up and it's given up government benefits. or surrendering constitutional rights. Social Security, for example, is not a constitutional right. It's a government benefit, but the government can't compel you to give up a constitutional right in order to accept the benefit. So you don't really have to decide, is education a fundamental constitutional right? All you have to decide is this a benefit? And obviously it is, and if it's a benefit, then they can't compel you to surrender a constitutional right for that benefit.
Mr. Harrington, if there were any evidence that males wearing hair that reached over their collar were disruptive to the conduct of students generally in the school, that it was perhaps unsanitary for males, unlike females, to wear their hair that way, that in any way operated to the detriment or deterioration of good order and discipline in the school that must be maintained for the learning process. If there were any evidence to support that, would that be a sufficient rational basis to support such a rule?
Well, I think, first, I don't believe the rational basis test applies because we're dealing with a fundamental right and you have to use the heightened...
Would that be a sufficiently compelling state interest?
I don't believe it would. I think, if I understand you correctly,
you demonstrated that wearing your hair over your collar, if you were a male, was disruptive of the educational process. Would that be a compelling state interest?
It would have to be done. It would have to be done on an individualized basis, whether that student doing it. In all the free speech cases, the courts say you don't punish the messenger. You protect the messenger. So in this situation, if that particular person was disruptive because of his hair, then you deal with that particular person. You don't pass a general rule altogether that would prevent the exercise of the constitutional right.
In other words, the response of other students to that long hair is immaterial as far as that individual's right is concerned. But if you have a half a dozen young men in school, ages 14 to 18, who wear their hair over their collar, and each of them is disruptive, and it's directly related to the length of their hair. If they wear, they do wear it like a gang jacket or something of that nature, a particular style or something like that, and they are disruptive, and it's related directly to their appearance. Would that be a sufficient basis, compelling state interest?
Well, I think even in that situation, Judge, what has to happen is that you have to, first of all, protect the person, the right of the person. It's not that we're going to take away the right of the person to wear hair long in order not to have the disruption. If it can't be accomplished, then perhaps you look at a different step.
In other words, unless you can demonstrate that as with Solomon, the length of the hair is directly related to their behavior, you cannot show a compelling state interest.
That's right. And in fact, all of the codes right now, most of the codes in Texas and school districts in Texas are clean and neat codes. They're not hair length codes. And all the troubles that go on in terms of regulating in the dress code situation are gang colors and insignia and messages. There's nothing at all in the record whatsoever suggests any problems with any disruption with regard to hair length. At all. Nothing.
If gang membership was characterized by a particular hairstyle or hair length, would that be subject to regulation by the school districts, or would that be constitutionally protected?
I think probably at that state it would still be constitutionally protected because it's different than your clothes that you take on and take off at the school door and change. I'd like to pass it back to Mr. Barber.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
The court will allow 3 extra minutes because our question is going to Mr. Barber's time.
May it please the court, counsel. The Court of Appeals has found that judicial intervention is not proper in this case, and it arrives at this erroneous conclusion by following the equal protection rationale of the Federal Fifth Circuit Kerr case. But from the questions that were asked,
Didn't the Court of Appeals rely on Mercer? Did we just not...
The Court of Appeals did rely on and by following the pre-McLean Court of Appeals Mercer case.
And did we not approve of Mercer, just recently?
The rationale that Mercer used when it dealt with, in general, the ERA is excellent. It's just when it gets to the point that says it's a fundamental right, but we're not going to extend this fundamental right to juveniles, and they also use school children. Even if this court followed Mercer to the letter, it would not apply to an 18-year-old student or the class of 18-year-old students, because the Mercer court made a very clear distinction and drew the line at the age. Now, Kerr tried to, the Fifth Circuit got tired of hearing these cases and said, you can't make these rules for colleges, but you can make them for high schools. And the dissent pointed out that this is not logical, that there is basically no difference between a 17-year-old college freshman and a 17 or 18-year-old high school senior. If under our law, an 18-year-old is an adult and may do all of the things that an adult may do, then this school children rationale should not apply to them.
Does that mean that if a school board may regulate the student newspaper, it may do so with regard to 17-year-old students, but if you have an 18-year-old student, then the full free speech rights available to all other adults regardless?
No, sir. The cases are pretty clear. The federal cases are pretty clear on that, that the school board may regulate the school newspaper because they are providing the means for that expression, whereas speech that is just considered disruptive, they don't provide that means, and so there's different tests there. In our instance, clearly the school does not provide the means for a student to grow his hair longer than the regulations require. But the court was talking about federal cases. Well, there's a whole lot of federal circuits that have held in opposition to the Fifth Circuit. And there is no unanimity here in federal law on this issue. Several federal circuits have said that this violates equal protection. Well, this court has said that ERA and McLean made it clear that equal protection is nowhere as fundamental right as the Equal Rights Amendment. So, the federal courts and the federal constitution, they don't have an ERA. So their rationale is of little utility here. The courts clearly stated that ERA is a fundamental right. And for the Court of Appeals to refuse to allow judicial intervention just as a blanket matter of law like the Federal Fifth Circuit did is a violation of the Texas Open Courts provision. The federal constitution has no open courts provision, just as it has no ERA. But Texas courts may not close the courthouse door as easily as the feds do, nor should they. This court has indicated a willingness. I guess my time...
Go ahead and finish the statement.
Well, this court has indicated a willingness to intervene in our schools where appropriate, and they should, where a suspect class has been implicated and where several fundamental rights have been implicated. The students who have gone to ISS over this issue are victims here. Those who quit school because of this issue are victims here. And I think it's an important issue, not a frivolous issue, as to those students. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. T.L. Bees will present argument for respondent.
Please record. Tom Reese from Colorado City, Texas. That's in Mitchell County, Texas. I have with me today Mike Ratliff of our firm. It's a pleasure to be here. Texas courts have always sought a balance when it's dealing with the school systems. Even in the recent case of Tungate, they spoke of it and didn't even mention Mercer. The procedures and policies of the school districts of Texas have to be balanced, and the heavy hand of the courts must stay out of it.
Excuse me. What is the basis for this rule? I have difficulty understanding. We talk about the heavy hand of the courts, but there's such a thing as a heavy hand of government, even on a local basis, when there's no... I haven't heard anything that it evidences this meets a rational basis test, much less a compelling state interest test.
Well, let's go to the issue that they brought up, that the only thing we can do to disprove or prove a compelling point on this matter is to prove disruption. How do you do that? A Longhorn student is just as peaceful and is a good athlete, good academic. He sits in the back row and does just as good a job as everybody else in that classroom. How do we prove that that's disruptive? We can't.
Then why have the rule?
All right. The rule is a teaching device. We're teaching our students from a local device place. Where we're coming from is Colorado City, Mitchell County, Texas. And we're teaching them a principle with respect to how they are to work in our community and how they are to live in our community. As our school board president testified at the case, I feel like a student needs to learn more than writing and arithmetic. He must learn how to work in the community out there.
What does it teach?
He teaches the community societal values. It's harder for a person in Colorado City, Texas to get a job if they have a long hair. They at this level, we can teach them the consequences of that rule. When it's at a learning stage, when the consequences of it is not so severe. It is a teaching device in which a local school has used. It's not something that we can go in and prove that it's unsafe for them to have it. All kids with long hair are dirty. We can't do that. But we can say our school board, elected from the community at large, has decided that hair codes are necessary and a device in which we can teach our students how our societal values in our community are.
But what I'm hearing from you is it teaches them conformity with arbitrary rules and regulations that may have no basis in rational human behavior.
The local employer in Colorado City or in Blockbusters in Dallas doesn't conform to the Constitution.
But he has a right to be irrational.
Right.
If he wants
and
to.
We have a right to teach those students that he has
to
the right
irrational,
to be irrational.
To comply with that irrationality?
If he walks out of our school system with the naive opinion that everybody has to comply with the Constitution from now on, we haven't taught him everything there is about the real world.
My vision serves me correctly, then neither Justice Cornyn nor Justice Gonzalez could get a job in Colorado City. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, Barry's maybe not at Blockbusters in Dallas either. Where are we planning these employment? Where are we going for these employment jobs? The point is that if we're going to take...
Excuse me, Rick, are you telling me that the employers or even the majority of employers or any significant number of employers in Colorado City don't employ males that have hair that extends over their collar?
I'm telling you that is a local opinion, and it's expressed to our local school officials, and it's expressed to them in that manner, yes.
I'm still not certain how this rate relates to the educational process and the mandatory educational requirements that the legislature and the Texas Education Agency impose.
It goes to the same issues that you're talking about in Mercer. We don't need to mess with the items of where to park cars on the school campus. Do girls get to park closer to the door than boys? Do we need to put the lockers in this particular area for girls and the lockers for boys in this area to prevent this? Where are we going to stop at this point in stage? Are we going to go to the point of our very curriculum core of our schools? It's a device that local school systems have determined is needed to teach students within that various local society. And if we go to the issue as to whether or not it's disruptive, or whether or not hair is too long, or whether as to participation in athletics or things of this nature, we're going in a circle that we will never get to the end of. We'll put experts on the stand, and we'll put the whole communities on the stand, and we'll have a vote.
But under the standard that you articulate, then there is no standard at all imposed on the local school board for any irrational or arbitrary rule they might wish to impose. It goes beyond the imagination what they can do under that non-standard.
Our point is Mercer says that these are areas where we're going to stay. Stop. The federal system of the Fifth Circuit says we don't want to get into the hair case. And the testimony in this particular case is from superintendents from various other, not superintendents, but principals from other school systems.
Principal in this school?
No.
Opposed to the rule, was he not?
He testified in favor of the rule. And then he was going to enforce
contrary to the information this court has before it, but we'll go to the record and find out. My understanding, the other side just argued that this rule wasn't even enforced for about a year. It was just didn't exist.
That's not true. It has been enforced all of these years, and we have sent children home, and we have asked that they have their hair cut, and they all had it cut. And in fact, the witness in this particular case said, Austin Barber said, "I like to wear my hair long. I would like to wear an earring in my ear," and that's all. Federal courts have said that individually is not symbolic speech. Individuality of a person is nothing.
We're talking about the Texas Constitution here.
Sir?
We're talking about
right.
The Texas Constitution.
But
I don't believe we have any federal issue.
We've asked that he cut his hair, and he cut it. And we asked the other students to cut their hair, and they cut it. We've denied no one any right to school or right to education in our community. And that point is not before this matter. And that's why the Court of Appeals said, my goodness, where is the damage? What happened to this? We enforced a rule and it happened.
Mr. Reese, let me ask you about that. Was Mr. Barber expelled from school or denied access to the educational facilities or services of the school?
No, sir, it was not. I think the evidence will...
Did he choose to drop out at some point?
He did not. He graduated, and I understand he is president of college.
What is in-school suspension?
In-school suspension is a mechanism of discipline, and that probably what that was testified with respect to this particular case, and that the in-school suspension was an alternative program for students who received discipline.
Tell me exactly what it does. Does it remove students from regular classes?
It removes the students from the regular classroom. It
segregates them from the student body?
Yes, sir.
Deprives them of classroom instruction?
No, sir, it does not.
Denies participation in extracurricular activities and
yes,
graduation ceremonies?
It has not in Colorado City.
Was Mr. Barber told if he didn't get his hair cut, that was what was going to happen to him?
He certainly was. That was a discipline.
So he voluntarily to get his hair cut?
He did. And
no coercion at all in that.
Well, the point is that at this point in stage, there was no education denied. We had a program for that. And even for the serious offenders, we have other alternative programs. No education is denied any student because of the discipline in this school, irrespective of how severe it might be. And education is not denied. The legislature gave the school systems and the right and power to grant these matters with respect to how to go about educating. And they didn't say that you've got to have carpet on the floor and certain types of lights. They indicated that you can educate your students in various areas and in a manner which you were doing. And for the courts to come in and say, as Mercer says, there are other people out there that are required to follow the dictates of the Constitution, and our school system is following the dictates of the Constitution.
The court's not intervening in this, or regardless of the outcome in this court. We don't go out and get cases. They're brought to us by people in the community. And here you have a young man and his family in the community who took this case to court because they were dissatisfied with the treatment they received under the supervision of the school board.
Certainly.
And It's been through trial, it's been through Court of Appeals, it is now before this court, and we must resolve it. We are compelled under the open court's provision of the Constitution to address grievances that are brought under that Constitution. And they have asserted at least three constitutional bases under the Texas Constitution for being here today.
Yes. They have. But those three, the ERA amendment and the Mercer case has indicated that we're not going to get involved in that. And we're not going to go to that point and stage. Mercer followed the strict rule with respect to determining, scrutinizing the rule or regulation that was violating. And then went on to say, we're not going to get involved in this. And they came up with the freedom of speech, or the right of freedom of speech, and ever. Case that just came up down the road that said, in this particular instance, the way you wear your hair is not symbolic speech. And especially when you say, I like to wear it this way on one day, and I like to wear it this way the next day, and if I have a theatrical play I'm going to be in, I want to wear it some other different way. Where is the speech? And then they came up with the right of privacy. The right that our hair, that is viewed by the whole world that we are looking at in front of us, is private. And all of the cases that have looked at this have indicated it's not private. And then they come up with the aspect that we're denying the right to an education because of this rule or regulation. It's not true. The point is, where is the court stand on it? Mercer indicated we're going to give that power to supervise the curriculum of the school system, the power to teach principals, the power to give to decide where and when and how the students are going to be educated. And we shouldn't be involved in the normal, up-to-date affairs of that school. We shouldn't be there when the fight breaks out on the fire home in the school ground to supervise whether or not he gets warnings, to supervise whether he has an attorney. That is for the school systems to handle. And that's what Mercer says, and that's what the Court of Appeals is to far down the line for us to be there. We can't handle it properly. And certainly if we look at all of these matters and put them before the court, that's what we're saying.
I'm sorry, what I just heard is an argument that the Constitution of Texas does not protect public school students in this state.
It does protect them. It does.
How so if they cannot enforce those rights?
Just as others besides the judiciary are charged with following the dictates of the Constitution, we must be wise enough to perceive the constant judicial intervention into an institution does more harm than it's good. That's what Mercer said. That's what the federal courts say. And a school district elects its trustees from the local community. And those are reasonable people, just as you are reasonable people. They have just as much conscience with respect to the Constitution as anyone. And in our particular instance, we have the rami of all races on there.
But there's no avenue of appeal from their control.
At this level, Mercer said that.
No matter how arbitrary, no matter how irrational, no matter how unreasonable, there's no avenue of appeal from their rule and regulation.
Is there an appeal from that principal's decision that this boy ought to be punished and this one's not to be punished? Is there a decision with respect to how to handle this curriculum with this book being the right book or this one being the wrong book? We're at this point of the educational process where we're teaching children in a learning years.
We're not teaching them about liberty. We're not teaching them about due process. We're not teaching them about mutual regard for one another's autonomy and individuality, though, are we?
Autonomy, certainly, autonomy deals with the mind, and certainly in this particular instance, the hare is anatomical. It does not involve the mind. We certainly believe at this point in stage that living by rules, whether they're right or wrong, just as in the household of the parent, is the way. It's their life at this stage. And
any rule, regardless of how wrong it may be.
Certainly if that rule could be very wrong, if it was parentally given at that point in stage, where is the appeal?
Even in the military service, when a soldier says that he will not obey a wrongful order, he will not obey an illegal order, he will not obey an order simply because it comes from a superior, instead of court-martialing him, or perhaps after his court-martial, we make an officer out of him because he's a leader. Do we teach leadership? Or mere conformity?
We teach leadership, I think, very definitely, and we teach the student that there is a real world out there. And in order to do that, we must not only teach the rules that society goes by, but also those rules that the Constitution requires. Both of those must be weighed when that student goes into the real world. There's two sides to every story, and there's a side out there that, at this point in stage, that we can go in and teach a student a rule so that it can understand when it gets into the real world that that rule has a meaning, that I may not be able to get a job if I have my hair long. I may not have a job if I have an earring in my ear. And the diverse of these hair codes is unbelievable. In the testimony in this case, we had no hair case. We had a hair case that said you can have long hair, but you can't have earrings. We had one that said that you can have earrings, but they can't dangle off of your ear. Where are we going? What are we going to do? At this point in stage, the rules are being made by the school systems based upon what the local people have voted into office, based upon those societal values. And that rule is being taught. And that rule, at this point, can be breached. And it's not half as serious as it's going to be when he gets into the real world and he breaches it and he can't get a job and he goes on to unemployment, he can't do these things. That's his priority when that point happens. But we've taught him the rules there. We've taught him to open the doors for the girls. We've taught him these various things.
Your time has expired there.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a few comments by way of rebuttal. I found it interesting to note the supposed tie here between the hair length rule and the ability to get a job in Colorado City. While observing that Mr. Ratliff here apparently would, assuming he works in Colorado City, I believe, wouldn't pass muster under the code. And the code, according to Mr. Deese here, is that we teach you not to have long hair because you can't get a job in Colorado City. Apparently you can be an attorney without much problem.
Probably not a good example, counsel.
Okay. There is no disruption argument here again, if you notice. No disruption argument here whatsoever. It's just strictly conformity. That's all. Conformity. The courts require fact-specific inquiry. We have a year that went by in which the hair code was not enforced against Mr. Barber. There was no disruption whatsoever that is even alleged. There is no disruption whatsoever in the trial record.
I think, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but when counsel was up there describing, I think he was describing this student, Mr. Barber, said he was a good student, he was a good athlete, he was not disruptive, he participated in classes, made good grades, that he conducted and engaged in no disruptive behavior at all.
That's right.
I mean, am I correct? Is that the gentleman you were describing?
Yes, sir. I don't think it was an athlete. I was using examples. There are those people out there. Long hairs are very good.
Mr. Harrington, the dress code, as quoted in the Court of Appeals footnote, states that the dress code is established in part to instill discipline. Is that a value or a trait that is allowed under you, the way you view the world, or not?
Sure. I think instilling discipline is very important. Absolutely. But the question is...
So if the purpose of the rule is to instill discipline in the school district, you're saying because we have the Equal Rights Amendment in Texas, that the grooming or dress code falls because of the ERA?
There is no right whatsoever to engage in undisciplined conduct in a school whatsoever. We wouldn't make that contention. What we're saying is that if you have a fundamental right that comes into play here, then there has to be a compelling reason for that particular regulation that would overcome that right.
And if the school board makes a judgment that in this community we're going to instill discipline by this rule, that's not a substantial basis for the rules, so the rules should fall.
But the school board could pass a rule if it showed a compelling reason to pass it.
But discipline's not one of them.
That's right. They don't argue that it's a compelling. They don't argue that there's a compelling reason.
Well, the basis for the rule is, according to them, is to instill discipline. But you're saying that's not a valid basis.
I don't have any problem with a rule instilling discipline. I mean, discipline is very important. The question, whether it is if you can show that overcoming a person's privacy, overcoming a person's right to be free from gender-based discrimination, is that occurs because there's a compelling interest to do that,
and that means
is the least restrictive means to overcome it.
Counselor, is there any evidence that this rule contributes to the maintenance of discipline?
Not at all. In fact, the testimony from the superintendents and the principals is that this rule is totally unrelated, and the effect of it is many times to discourage children, kids, and that they drop out of school. One point I wanted to mention about Mercer that I don't think anybody's mentioned, that we do mention in the brief, is that Mercer comes up on an interlocutory appeal and abuse of discretion standard. It is not a trial record that gets up there. It's an interlocutory appeal, and of course there's great deference to abuse of discretion as to whether the trial judge is going to enter a temporary injunction. And that's what Mercer is about. Mercer sets out the test, okay, which this court has adopted or approved in a sense in McLean. But the real issue is the abuse of discretion. It's not an actual resolution on the plenary merits.
Let me see if I heard you correctly. Did you say there was evidence in the record that some students had become disillusioned or discouraged by the existence of this rule and had withdrawn from school as a result of it?
We didn't point to anybody specifically, but there is evidence in the record that some students had dropped out, and there was all from Mr. Barber himself. And then there's evidence from the different school officials that this is a consequence of this kind of rule.
Is there any evidence how many people stayed as a result of the rule?
As a result of the rule?
Yes.
I don't know. No, I don't.
All right.
Any other questions? Thank you. That concludes the argument of the third cause. The court will take another brief recess.
Right.